Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on The Score.
Time to talk to Mike Florio. He is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He's on the Al Pamani Ford hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Happy Thanksgiving, Mike. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. What's the plan for the Florio household? Getting everything bubbled up in the West Virginia compound there with you and yours. You're doing indoor, outdoor. You smoking a turkey? You deep frying one? What's this year?
We have an outdoor patio area that is conducive to 10 people maybe spread out. The food is something that my wife handles, and this year it consists of supporting the local economy by purchasing the food already prepared from one of the local food providers. So we like to stimulate the economy, which is better than saying we're too lazy to cook, and we're going to have a nice little get-together. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. It's going to be in the 50s. Hopefully it won't rain. We've got an outdoor TV on which we'll watch football, and we'll just kind of try to enjoy the day and forget about all the troubles and struggles and issues of life, at least for a few hours.
Do we know for sure if Pittsburgh and the Ravens are going to play this thing? Because it was some ambiguity as far as some of the positive tests and the contact tracing.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we don't know when the Ravens are going to be able to reconvene because of the protocols that have kicked in with the positives that keep being generated. They practiced, they didn't practice. They had a virtual day yesterday, one of the most important practice days of the week when you're talking about a Thursday game. They may fly out on Thursday to Pittsburgh, which they can do because it's not a long flight. They could probably go by bus if they needed to, although 4 hours in a bus is probably a little long if you want to actually be productive on a football field. But until they get the green light to reconvene, that's the thing that may stand in the way of them playing. So I expect the NFL to do everything they possibly can to get this game in. There was a shift several weeks back. It started with the Raiders-Buccaneers game where the NFL's attitude became, get the games in, get the games in, next man up, however many men it is up, get your roster filled out with guys who aren't on the COVID-19 reserve list and get the games played.
It is a shame because from a football standpoint, I think that is a really compelling game, trying to figure out what kind of offensive slump that the Ravens are in and then this Pittsburgh team that has just been outstanding this season.
Well, and the Ravens firmly believe that they beat the Steelers in everything but the only stat that matters, points scored versus points allowed. But the Ravens dominated the last time, 265 rushing yards. Now, one of those running backs who helped contribute to that, J.K. Dobbins, he won't be available. Mark Ingram won't be available. Gus Edwards and Lamar Jackson will be there to carry the load. But the Ravens really did move the ball well. They just couldn't score points, and there were too many mistakes by Lamar Jackson. And it's really on Lamar Jackson. This is only his third career start against Pittsburgh. The first two haven't gone well. They won last year in Pittsburgh in overtime against Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges. This year in Baltimore, obviously they lost. And this is it. This is a death blow. Definitely to any aspirations the Ravens have to win the division. But also, I think, as it relates to even getting to the playoffs. If they lose this one, they're really putting themselves in a tough spot, and they just have to forget about last year that they were 14-2. They didn't slam the door on that. They embraced that they wanted to try to match it and beat it this year. Well, now they're 6-4. They've lost twice as many games as they lost last year. They just need to focus one at a time and grind it out and hope to get to the playoffs and then hope to win when they get there.
Dallas also in action, and they have had a wild week. We get the story not only that Mike McCarthy did a Gallagher act before the game and started smashing watermelons with a sledgehammer. They apparently traveled their own watermelons, found a sledgehammer locally, and allowed him to do this sort of premeditated act. I thought it was going to be like Jack Del Rio and the punter in Jacksonville that almost chopped his own foot off when he had the axe and the stump in the locker room. I was worried about something happening there. Then they have the near tragedy yesterday with their strength and conditioning coach Marcus Paul having a heart attack at their facility, and reporters going so far as to declare him dead when he wasn't dead. I mean, there's no shortage of Cowboys stories right now.
Well, and the situation with Marcus Paul is extremely serious. We have been very careful to only report on official announcements from the team. Family members have made comments, other reporters, other people who have played for Marcus Paul when he was in the Giants. David Deal, I think, is the one who got the ball rolling on the notion that Marcus Paul had passed. But it's a serious situation. It left the players rattled. They shut down practice yesterday. The coaching staff is affected by it. I don't know what it means for Thursday. But the Gallagher routine from Saturday night, it did prompt Ron Rivera, the Washington coach, to say maybe he'll smash some pumpkins tonight, the night before the game between Washington and Dallas. And Del Rio is on the Washington staff. So I think somebody needs to make sure Rivera is checking everyone's trunk or back seat for any axes or tree stumps, because 16, 18 years after the fact, maybe Del Rio will try that one again. Although based on how it ended, like you said, Chris Hansen chopping his leg, not a good outcome, especially when you're a punter and you make your money off of your leg. I think Jack Del Rio will not be bringing the tree stump or the axe into the meeting room tonight.
Smashing produce is one way to try to win a game, although probably, at least for Dallas, had more to do with the fact that they were playing the Vikings. I don't want to wax poetic too much on the NFC East, but somebody has to win this division. Mike, do you have any idea? Does Thursday help clear it up, or even this weekend, as to who you think comes out on top in that terrible, terrible division of football?
Well, it is amazing to think that the Eagles, for as bad as they are in first place. And I don't see them winning the division. Now, last year they were 5-7, backs against the wall, and they finally found a way to figure it out. I just don't see them being able to do it this year. They just feel desperate. They feel like they're in quicksand to me. They're sticking with Carson Wentz because, frankly, they're stuck with Carson Wentz through 2021 contractually, and they don't know how to make it any better on the fly. I think whoever wins tomorrow's game between Dallas and Washington is going to acquire an aura, a sense, a shine. It's a big spot. 30 million people are going to watch. Well, they all may not be watching, but the TVs are going to be turned on. It's always a big game, and I think the winner of that game will be, at that point, the team that people regard as the favorite. And that team will have doubled its wins in a five-day period from 2-7 to 4-7.
Mike, I don't know if you saw the story yesterday, but the talented people over at the Defector, that is the former Real Deadspin crowd, Kelsey McKinney wrote a story about the distribution of the NFL's positive COVID tests and the official announcements, and looked at on however by day of the week when players are placed on the NFL reserve COVID-19 list. And all the days look about the same, with the exception of Sunday. And we know that they changed this in mid-October as they decided they were going to do game day testing. So they adjusted some of these numbers accounting for that. And even if you account for that, there are only a tiny number of Sunday positives. And then we start thinking as to why is that? Why is there a lopsided distribution of positive tests on every single day that's pretty much the same except for Sunday? Did you find that suspicious at all?
Well, I haven't read the article, and now my interest is piqued, because the way they do it, they test you in the morning, mid to late morning usually, early morning sometimes, but they take that sample, they send it off to a laboratory. When the team finds out depends, frankly, on how far the laboratory is from the team facility, but they do the tests every day of the week, Monday through Sunday. And early on, they weren't doing game day testing, which was creating a donut hole because, in theory, you could have somebody who's positive and you didn't know he was positive, and you don't find out he was positive until at some point Tuesday morning because the positive test gets collected not on Sunday but on Monday. But if they're not returning positives on Saturday night and into Sunday, yeah, look, if you get a positive on a Sunday morning, what can you do? What do you do? You can't shut a team down on a Sunday morning. They want to get the games in. I mean, the cynical side of me thinks there's something funny going on here, but then you're getting to the point very quickly where you are involving their laboratory partner in this foul play and basically suggesting that they're suppressing positive results from Saturday, holding them until Sunday. I mean, that you can't just make it go away, right? If the person is positive on Saturday, they're not going to be negative on Sunday. They're going to be positive on Sunday as well. So I don't know if it's just coincidence or luck or whatever. My I love a good conspiracy theory as much as anyone, although I don't love conspiracy theories as much as I used to, given recent events in the world. But I think that any time a conspiracy theory begins to spread, you get more people involved in it, it's harder to keep it quiet. And I think that to pull something like that off and to get the lab involved and to have all those employees who are doing the testing and it's coming back positive and they're not reporting it as positive because they don't want to derail games on Sunday, I just think that's too many pieces to hold together, and I don't think the NFL is competent enough to pull it off without somebody blowing the whistle. I'm going to opt to say it's coincidence, although I am suspicious.
Okay.
I think that's fair. That's hedging your bets either way. What about this one? We just found out for the Bears media schedule today, our reporter Mark Grody is reporting that the Bears schedule has switched from Nick Foles at 10:45 to players available at 10:45. Mm-hmm. Do you think Mitch Trubisky starts this game?
Well, what has Nick Foles done to make us think that he deserves to continue to start for the rest of the season? I know when Matt Nagy decided to flip the switch from Trubisky to Foles during the Falcons game, and in the aftermath of that, the decision was made that Foles is the guy, period. He's the guy, he's the guy, he's the guy. Well, at what point, if you want to contend, if you want to take advantage of this opportunity the Bears have, and look, I've got no reason to believe they're going to run the table, but if they would, they'd win the division because they've got the Packers twice. They're two games behind. They'd sweep the Packers along the way. They'd finish 11-5, and they'd win the division. Again, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
But this is your chance. This is your chance to make it happen. This is your chance to bend the fate in your direction, and maybe this is the time for Trubisky to go back on the field. I don't know. He was 3-0, right? So I'm curious, but I wouldn't be shocked because Foles has not been great. And one of the reasons he hasn't been great is they can't protect him. And he stands in there and he takes those big hits. And we thought he got seriously hurt a week and a half ago. And, yeah, maybe that's a factor. Maybe he's not truly 100%. So you go with a 100% Trubisky instead of a 95% Nick Foles.
He's awful, Mike. He's just terrible.
There's a lot of people that can fit that.
Foles is brutal. Everything they said about him, all the stuff they said, knows the system, knows John DeFilippo. He can do the things that Mitch doesn't do and see the things that Mitch doesn't see and understand the rhythm of our route combinations and the RPOs and everything else. And he doesn't do anything they said he does. None of it. And he doesn't hang in there against pressure. He wilts against pressure. He throws a terrible ball. He throws it 6 feet over people's head. It is a colossal failure on the part of an expensive one, another expensive one, as we're reminded of Mike Glennon as he gets the start in Jacksonville. I mean, this thing, it's been a total flop.
I've been under the Nick Foles spell since he pulled off that Super Bowl 52 MVP thing and everything that they had to do to get there, beating the Falcons, beating the Vikings, beating the Patriots. And maybe in hindsight it was some kind of an NFL version of Slumdog Millionaire where the planets just lined up perfectly for Nick Foles at the right time, every step of the way, the right play, the right read, the right call, the right everything, just one needle threaded after another. Shireen Williams, who does my afternoon show PFTPM with me, she's been trying to talk me out of it. And you know what did it for me finally? The throw to Anthony Miller when, you know, the Red Sea parted. There was no one in Nick Foles' way. He could see Miller after they had gotten the turnover on the first drive of the game last Monday night, and he sails it high, and it goes off his hands, and it gets intercepted. That's when I thought, okay, look, maybe you're just like a Tim Tebow where you can only deliver when the stakes are the absolute highest. You have to be able to deliver week in and week out, game in and game out, first quarter through fourth quarter, and maybe Foles just doesn't have it.
I think he doesn't. I think this thing is done, and maybe Mitch gets a dead cat bounce and revives his career. And the 11-5 thing, that is your pecan pie in the sky is what that is right now. But Mike, we will let you go.
Anything is possible.
Come on, man.
Things are unlikely, but anything is possible. This is a season of optimism. Well, okay. Is it? I don't know. We can't get optimism in our normal lives, so let's get optimism wherever we can create it.
Fair enough.
Sunday night when the game starts.
Have a healthy and happy Thanksgiving holiday.
All right, same to you. Bye-bye.
That is Mike Florio. Next up, let's open up the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Shane Reardon is going to join us for Shane's Meat Live. We can talk turkey, we can talk brining, we can talk other alternative options, or anything you really need to know. Maybe you are a genuine Thanksgiving cooking novice, like so many are, and you just need basic tips about how to pull it off if you're looking at a kitchen saying, I don't know how to use any of this stuff. Shane is here for you. She's Leila Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein, and we're going to get meaty with it next on The Score.
Welcome to a special Thanksgiving edition of Shane's Meat Live with Shane Reardon.
Now, turkey. Who doesn't like turkey? You like turkey?
I love turkey.
It's the most lean piece of poultry you can get.
And God saith, let man have dominion over the fish of the sea, but even more so the turkeys of the land. Whether they be brined or dryeth of rub.
My brother-in-law deep-fried a turkey. 'Twas much toil and hardship for scant reward.
Stuffing, by and large, is evil. It adds mass, which increases the cooking time, and that leads to dry meat.
Shane's Meat Live.
Look at this big, sexy ham.
With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Stupid sexy ham. Let's do all of this right now with Shane Reardon. He is on Twitter at Shane_Reardon. And what's your actual title at the station? It used to be like operations manager or executive producer or sports director. Who are the number two to Mitch, other than just being sort of what's your actual title?
Yeah, I don't think I have one, Dan. I just kind of float around and I go where I'm needed.
You have to have a title.
Yeah, I think it's like operations department.
Operations department. You're an entire department.
Sure, just
well, whatever.
Operations guy.
We know that Shane Reardon also is an avid and experienced and fine, some talented cook, and he's here to help out. Yeah, I'm not gonna. Kevin Zipak's gonna get mad at me. But wait, are you driving?
It's my girlfriend's birthday today, so you are very lucky for me to take time out of today to do this with you. She is inside somewhere getting, like, her eyes read by a witch, some Western medicine thing. It works for her, so she's in there. I'm sitting in the car. Layla knows. Okay. She's, like, very Western medicine, essential oily.
Is it Eastern medicine?
What? Yeah.
I don't know. Sure, it's Eastern medicine. Whatever. Hemispheres don't matter.
First of all,
is there an echo?
Birthday,
are you guys getting echoed? I'm getting like feedback in my headphone.
No, you sound like you're sitting in a car. But other than that, I think you're fine. But
okay.
If you want to check it out on Twitch, it's twitch.tv/Chicago670score if you want the magnificent visual of Shane in his car. So, if somebody is, what is the most? What do you think the biggest worry that people have who haven't done any Thanksgiving cooking before? Is it timing out dishes? Is it figuring out oven space? Or is it still about getting the bird wrong?
I think it's all the above. It doesn't hurt to... I think it's why people should deep fry their turkeys. That might be burying the lead. But deep fry your turkey to free up the oven space. And I think it's just... It's amateurs not knowing when things are going to be done and how long they take. Everything's about timing. Don't be afraid to take notes Don't be afraid to put down on your notebook, hey, I want the turkey done at 4:30, and it's 10 pounds. I know it's going to be 15 minutes per pound, so I got to go in 3 hours before, so it's got a half hour to rest when I want it on the table, you know? So I think the biggest thing is definitely timing. And then turkey is just kind of a trash bird. It's a horrible bird. I don't like the taste of it, unless it's deep fried. So no matter what, it's going to be hard to not make your turkey dry unless you're paying very, very, very close attention to it, you know? So I always preach either the deep fry. I know what Hope Zawoski says about brining, but she's wrong. So it's about brining, and it's about basting properly with a good amount of white wine and butter if you're going to roast.
Yeah, good luck to you now. Now you hear
you're bringing down the thunder. Hope and I were texting via Jay the other day about homemade pasta, and I really respect her opinion about homemade pasta, but I think the anti-brining opinion of turkey is trash.
Well, she will say it's not an opinion.
Oh.
She will say it is settled science. So good luck with you.
Nope.
Good luck to you, I will say. All right, so if I'm doing legs, would you say brine or no brine?
I would go no brine because if I'm doing legs only, I'm smoking them. So people will smoked turkey is great. Any smoked bird is great. But you can't smoke a whole turkey because it does take different times for all the pieces. That's why I'm not really a proponent of actually roasting a whole turkey or even deep frying a whole turkey. I just don't like the idea of turkey. But we've talked about often, like smoking chicken, you can break your turkey down. It's not traditional, but you can spatchcock it or break the legs and thighs and breasts off, because all those things are going to taste great if you cook them at the proper time. So cooking turkey, just like cooking anything, isn't about timing. It's about internal temperature. So you have to have a probe thermometer, and it's best if you have one with an attached cord and the temperature is external. It can sit outside of your oven, probe into the thickest part of the breast, and then do not wait until it hits 165. When that turkey hits 150 in the thickest part of the breast, go ahead and take it out, and then it's going to rest for a half hour up to 160, 161, which is technically below 165. But like we say on here often, Dan and Layla, don't be afraid to get sick every once in a while.
No, we don't say that, and we do not recommend that. And Shane Reardon, that particular opinion of his is not representative of this show, this station, or Entercom Corporation.
And he makes me do that.
Right, because that is our legal responsibility to mention that. 312-644-6767. If you have a question, don't be ashamed if you have a novice question. That's okay. We're not here to do necessarily expert cooking. I'm really serious about this. That if you never made mashed potatoes before, or if you're trying to figure out how to make a gravy, and you want some cooking advice, if you're maybe today you're doing something, tomorrow you're doing something, That's what we're here for, and we can get you up and get you on. But I'm dead serious here. Don't feel like you're going to be made fun of if you're asking a question about novice cooking, about size of a pan to use or temperatures or anything like that, because that's what we're here for. We want to make sure that you and your family have the happiest and most delicious Thanksgiving possible.
Yeah, I have a question. First of all, I don't know about which reading my eyes, Shane. But happy birthday, Gretchen. And secondly, what is spatchcocking?
Spatchcocking is when you remove the backbone with a good pair of kitchen sears and then spread it out skin side up on a pan. And a lot of people will put like a cast iron pan over the top of that to really smush it down, but you're cooking evenly across that entire surface and really crisping up the skin, as opposed to cooking the bird from the inside out as a whole within the cavity.
Now, was
so
that
like,
was it
butterflying the turkey?
Yeah, it's butterfly.
Yeah, butterflying the turkey. And it was Alton Brown and Raise Open saying, don't put stuffing in your turkey. I 100% agree with that weirdo.
Why is he a weirdo?
He just kind of creeps me out a little bit.
Alton Brown?
You can't tell me that Alton Brown doesn't creep you out a little bit.
No, I like his style. I've always...
That weird speech pattern.
I like that though. He's sort of he's the academic of that. He's sort of the fastidious academic, and I've always kind of admired that. But when you do, I guess apparently it's stuffing is what's inside the bird. Dressing is the same stuff that is done outside the bird. And do you have any specific recommendations when it comes to doing that? I think we're just doing like French breadcrumbs, making our own croutons and doing it in a stock with some sage.
Yeah, that's exactly how my mom used to do it. That the stuffing or the dressing, I guess if you want to call it. I call it stuffing even though it's not stuff inside the bird. That was always our biggest family tradition. Like the women in the family would come over to my mom's house, my parents' house, the day before Thanksgiving or 2 days before. And my mom would have bought like 20 loaves of bread from Aldi or something like that. And they would cube it up and they would toast all those off the night before. And then, yeah, it's just the stock and it's celery and it's onion and it's not sausage. There's no sausage in Shane's meat stuffing, and it's a lot of butter, and just in a pan, and just let that stuff marry together. But no, I don't put inside the turkey. It does take way too long to cook the turkey,
and then
the stuffing. Yeah, I agree on that. By the way,
yeah, I agree with the no sausage. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
No apples either. You know, some people put apples in there.
They also in the South will put oysters in it. They call it oyster dressing. But the idea is whatever you have left over, that becomes the dressing for the side of the meal. In the South, you do cornbread a lot of times, mid-Atlantic oysters, sausage and sage is one that a lot of people do. I think it's just because they have whatever's left over. But that's the idea behind dressing.
That's here's why we don't let people from the South come north of Kentucky.
A question from the 708 says, Shane, doing a turkey breast in a crock pot this year, what are your thoughts?
Don't. Why? Why are you doing that?
I don't know.
Sear your turkey breast and then finish it off in the onion. In the oven, not in the onion. don't put a turkey breast in a crock pot. That's going to take too long. Nobody wants to get up at 9 a.m. to put a single turkey breast in the crock pot. Learn some flavor.
Well,
I know you said we're not going to make fun of people.
Yeah,
I just said
we're not going to make fun of people.
I've done this with you like six times. I've never once advocated for putting anything in a crock pot. I'm not going to start now. I'm not going to fake with you.
But like, I literally just said, don't worry, we're not going to make fun of you. And then the first text question, you make fun of the guy.
All right, so I redact all of that and I just stick with don't.
Okay.
Did you see the question about the green bean casserole, Dan?
Go ahead.
About green bean casserole earlier, so I figured this should be brought up. So we have one from 608 asking, what's the ratio for cream of mushroom soup and green beans for a green bean casserole?
I don't measure, and I don't use Campbell's cream of mushroom soup. I cream my own, like, mushroom combination, and I just go by eye. I've never done it with the soup, and I've never done it like actually measuring. I know some people will do like two of the small cans of Campbell's mushroom soup to, I don't know, like a pound or two of green beans. And then you just kind of put it in a 9x16 or a 9x13. As long as it comes up to the top and you have room for your crumbs, I think that's fine. But I've never measured for a cream of mushroom soup.
630 texter says, what would be a good rub for a prime rib roast?
Okay, so this is perfect because I am anti-turkey. When I host Thanksgiving, I try not to do turkey. I prefer prime rib for both Thanksgiving and Christmas. I don't do a rub. I just do salt and pepper, and then I slather the entire thing in a compound butter of really good high-quality Kerrygold, garlic, and then thyme and rosemary inside the butter. And then you just rub that all over the prime rib into the oven at 550 degrees for a half hour, and then turn the oven off, and with your probe meat thermometer, wait for it to come up to like, I don't know, 98, 99 degrees. Let it rest for a half hour. It's going to come up to 120, 125.
And do you dry age at all with a prime rib roast? Do you do that yourself?
I've tried before. I think you and I talked about that, and I got the wrong mold. I didn't have the proper air circulation of the fridge, and I couldn't keep it at the right temperature because it's just a regular fridge. But I do plan on getting like a dorm mini fridge and trying my own dry age process. I'm actually here in Indiana to pick up my quarter cow.
Oh, so you're getting I'm your going cow.
To use, yep, I'm getting my cow this week. So I'm going to use, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 individual ribeyes and try dry aging them in a mini fridge.
Well, we've got some calls lined up, and we've got some questions for you coming your way. We are going to do more with Shane Reardon, Dan Bernstein, Layla Rahimi, and the meat and cooking expert, Shane Reardon. Shane's Meat Live. More of it next on The Score.
Welcome back to Shane's Meat Live, the Thanksgiving edition.
It's called a turducken.
Well, basically, I mean, you have a chicken, a duck, and a turkey.
Oh, God, what are you doing?
I'm taking out the backbone. It's how you get the turkey flat for spatchcocking.
What?
I thought you'd want to see me do it.
Ha!
Why is everyone so disgusted by turkey preparation?
Low and slow, and then you've got all that great flavor and juice. Ugh.
I'm trying to impress people here, Lisa. You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad.
Shane's Meat Live with Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi.
It feels like a Friday today because it should. Because we got a bunch of days off and a lot of lying around and navel gazing and gravy drinking. And here to help you with some cooking is Shane Reardon. Layla Rahimi is alongside today because it's Wednesday, even though it feels like a Friday. You can check us all out on Twitch. I'm sorry you have to look at Shane. But it's twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. A couple of news notes. Still haven't heard exactly from the Bears if there is a quarterback decision yet. Nick Foles was supposed to speak, and now it's just player availability. As soon as we know, we'll let you know. And Argentine soccer legend Diego Maradona has died at the age of 60. But that's not why you called. You called because Shane has information for you. So let's go to Oregon, Illinois, and Andy on The Score. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Dan. You know, it's time we put a stop to this silly brining. And the reason for it, you guys touched upon it a little bit ago. All it is the flavor of the turkey's going into that salt water, and you lose all that flavor. So it's nonsensical.
No, that's not it. You're injecting flavor into a bird that by nature is already dry, and then more from that brine can be added into your gravy. So if you really think that you're losing flavor from the turkey into the brine, then like you would add pasta water to a sauce, you can add some of that brining liquid to your gravy from the juices rendered from the turkey. So you are only adding juices to a turkey. You're not losing juices. That's not how it works.
Well, that Shane, seems to as I understood the science, that once you introduce that the salt, it leaches out some of the natural juice from the bird.
No, I don't believe in science.
What's wrong with you? Andy, thank you. Appreciate it. Griffith, Indiana finds Tim out today, and he's on Shane's Meat Live on The Score.
Hey, guys, happy Thanksgiving. Just a quick question about deep frying. I always struggle with exactly when to drop it in and how long to leave it in.
How?
if you're struggling with that, that's pretty serious struggling. I'm glad you called.
Yes, but now about the bird. the bird seems to draw the heat out of the oil, and I have a hard time getting it back up to temperature. And exactly how long does it take to cook? I got about a 19-pound bird.
Okay, so you're going to be closer to an hour. It's 3.5 minutes per pound. You want your oil at 350. And then you know that when you drop the bird in, the oil temperature is going to come down a little bit. So if you want to bring your oil temp up to 365, 375, then just know that within about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, you're going to have to monitor that oil temperature again and bring it down to 350. So it will obviously go down when you introduce a cold or room temperature turkey, but then just start a little bit higher and then bring it down when the oil starts to come back up to temper naturally.
Hi, yes, I have some information and research of the science behind brining according to KQED, the PBS station for San Francisco. And it says, brining entails soaking the meat for a number of hours in a chilled solution of salt and water. Through diffusion, the salt and water within the meat cells balance with the salt and water in the surrounding brine, which results in a higher concentration of salt and water in the meat. Boom!
Okay. There's science that matches with my narrative.
See, now I'm getting confused again as to whether or not I should brine. Here's a wheelhouse.
You should brine your turkey, Dan. And if you're starting today, you're too late. You should have started brining yesterday. And then once your brine hits 24 hours, you let that sit in the fridge uncovered for another 18 to 24 hours to really, really let that skin dry out. That's how you get your crispy turkey. But then you do have to remember you're going to have to baste with a bunch of white wine and butter, because that's how you reintroduce the moisture to the surface of the turkey.
This is a wheelhouse question for you. It says, making beef Wellington this year, any tips?
I mean, I hope that you've done it before, and I hope that it's not the absolute main portion of the meal, which if it's a beef Wellington, it probably is. It's not easy. It's a very, very difficult thing to take over on Thanksgiving. I guess just undercook your welly and then keep a really, really close eye on it. I don't know. You've got to be taking an internal temperature, and you really shouldn't go into the oven if the Wellington itself is over 85 degrees. And don't make your pastry too thick, because then that's going to take too long to cook, which is in turn going to raise the internal of your Wellington. So, or your tenderloin. So just be careful and get a big enough portion to feed everybody, because if you do it right, everyone's going to want more.
Yeah, for people who don't know actually what a beef Wellington is, it is a Chateaubriand, or full-size beef tenderloin, that is then encased in puff pastry. And because when I've seen this done, and I've never made it, but when I've seen it done, your butcher, when you buy your tenderloin, ask for extra fat. Because I know when my mom just used to bake a Chateaubriand, she would lay strips of beef fat over it, because it's not a naturally fatty cut of meat. And I would think that you would have to have some sort of insulation between the pastry and the meat. Some people will do a cremini mushroom, coarse ground mustard kind of mix in there and rub it down underneath the pastry, but there's got to be an insulator in there.
So it's the mushroom, it's the coarse ground mustard, and then it's usually parma ham, and that acts as a really good insulation. But that's a hell of a project to take on for Thanksgiving. Yep. That's an expensive Thanksgiving dinner.
Expensive and high stress, too, I would say. So good luck to you. Another call on Shane's Meat Live. Blake is in Northbrook. And he just dropped. Blake, he was going to ask, should you stuff the turkey? Do you believe in that, or is Alton Brown right?
No, I think Alton Brown is right. It's going to take too long to bring the entire temperature. Like, the stuffing is going to not take... It's going to take too long to cook, which is going to make the turkey overcook. Get rid of those extreme traditions and just do it the way real chefs say to do it. And don't stuff your turkey. You can stuff it with other stuff. I mean, I'm putting half lemons in there, some oranges, a bunch of herbs. But the real the number one thing to remember after your brine is make sure you put a good amount of butter and garlic and herbs in between the underside of the skin and the meat. Definitely stuff your turkey, not in the cavity, but in between the meat and the skin.
And you like what herbs for the turkey?
What herbs?
Mm-hmm.
Just thyme, rosemary, and sage if I have it. Just any kind of aromatic.
Now, would you throw like whole sprigs into the cavity? Does that do anything, or does that just sort of look good when you take it out?
No, I think it does a better job of, like, keeping the oils in the individual leaves, because there are oils in the twigs of the rosemary and oils in the twig of the thyme, you know? I don't think, like, the last thing you want is, like, to bite into your turkey and get a full sprig of rosemary, and it's easier to remove if you leave each individual leaf on the sprigs of thyme and rosemary.
There was also a texter asking about what wood to smoke a turkey with. If you're smoking a turkey.
Yeah, pecan. Definitely pecan wood.
Why?
It introduces more of a fruity flavor to the turkey, I think. A little sweeter taste.
You also just uncovered one of the greatest mysteries of the English language. You say pecan.
Yeah, Zach and... Brown smokes his turkey with pecan wood, so I smoke my turkey with pecan wood.
You're an odd bird yourself, Shane Reardon, but as always, we thank you for taking the time to provide your wisdom to us from your car while your girlfriend is having witchcraft performed.
That's how I understand it, Dan.
And by the way,
she loves it, and I'm not knocking it because I think it's great, and as soon as we're done here, I might go in and also have my eyes red just to see what's going on up here. But
by the way, when you called it...
And happy birthday to Gretchen.
When you called it Western medicine instead of Eastern medicine, I got a text from a friend who said, "Western medicine, I reckon I better drink this whiskey and let the leeches do the work."
That's how I do it. And I'm like Jared Goff. I don't know which side of the world the sun sets and rises.
Oh,
all right. Have a great Thanksgiving, Shane. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Good luck with the cow.
That man's getting a quarter cow today. That man is at a farm in Indiana getting a quarter of a cow that he's going to come home and put in the freezer. Hub Arkush probably can't say the same, but he is going to talk Bears with information coming out of Halas Hall today. Maybe we'll have something even after the break. He'll also take phone calls, too. So if you want to get lined up for some of that for the second segment with Hub, feel free to start in early at 312-644-6767. Layla Rahimi is sitting in today because it's a pre-Thanksgiving Wednesday, and it's nice. There's not a whole lot of things happening in the world. It's okay to take a deep breath and stretch it out a little bit, but back to some hardcore Bears talk next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.